Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO, Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Shawnee Williams. Shawnee is the recruiter and account executive of Illinois Equity Staffing, which is a woman-owned, minority-owned, disabled-owned human resources consulting and administration company that plays an emphasis on social equity, diversity, and inclusion. Thanks for joining me today, Shawnee.
Thank you for having me, Maynard. I appreciate it.
No, that's really great. You know, you came highly regarded, obviously. Mr. Michael Merriweather Jr., he's the man. Really enjoyed talking to him. And, you got to talk to Shawnee, which is great. So I'm happy to have you on. And
today we're I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
No, definitely. The pleasure's on mine. And today we're going to be talking about a lot of things that, you know, mentioned here earlier. You know, talking about recruiting in the industry and the struggles that go along with that. But not only that, but, you know, obviously we talk about a lot about, how lopsided the industry is. Talking about how, in terms of diversity, everything like that as well. And, you know, with not just with race, but also with gender as well. So I'm excited to talk about that and the struggles that are going on with that and also hearing your personal story. Really excited for that. But I guess, you know, to get it off, start off early, let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
So I'm here based out of Illinois, South Suburbs, so nearby Chicago.
Okay, very cool, yeah. And we're talking about some of the, I had somebody on from Chicago back in January, and he was talking about the kind of the mess that was going on there in the industry in general. You know, just the excitement, but also just like how, we've seen it time and time again, state after state, just kind of dropping the ball in terms of, licenses, who can have, who can't have, a lot of confusion and, lack of resources, everything like that. What have you seen there in Chicago and Illinois since legalization?
So it's funny. You haven't talked to anyone in 8 months from Illinois?
Yeah. Well, not on the podcast. Not on the podcast.
Such a huge, a huge jump from January, because January was really when recreational started, right? So we had the medical operators who now have permission to sell recreationally and are seeking their second site licenses. We hadn't even really opened up. In fact, January, I think second or third is when they accepted dispensary license application for the new entrants. So they're technically the new industry hadn't opened up. Now, since then, we're supposed to have 75 dispensary licenses awarded May 1st. Then we're supposed to have another 40 infuser, craft grow, and unlimited transportation licenses awarded July 1st. Come to find out, the company that's doing our applications, KPMG, was paid $7 million by the state of Illinois in a no-bid contract to grade our applications. So I think we had about, I guess if you combine them all, a little over 4,000 applications that they had to go through, and they are making $7 million.
Wow.
We have really nothing to show for it, except, you know, some folks are saying they're getting deficiency emails and whatnot on what things they need to fix and things that they need answers back on. But for the most part, like, we're all just kind of here twiddling our thumbs waiting for an announcement. The good thing is that Toy Hutchison, I think in June, maybe June 6th or June 5th, they ended up actually coming up with tie-breaking rules. And now they're active as of August 12th. So what that means is any day now, fingers crossed, we should hear about some of the top scores for the dispensaries. Now, we're still unsure on the craft grow, infuser, and transportation licenses, but fingers crossed, we should hear something very soon as far as who scored the top scores for the dispensary applications. So it's kind of a hot mess. The new applicants, especially the social equity applicants, are upset for good reason, because some of the operators are still, they're still going through their processes with zoning and community meetings, because they're a different process. They're grouped separately from the new applicants. So, you know, they can still work on their build out and work on zoning hearings and whatnot, while the new applicants are just waiting to hear what their score was. So it's been really stressful, to say the least. And people are, you know, the craft grow and infusers, they had to have a location. Where craft grow had to have a location. So what that means is they had like a contingent lease, or they had an active lease, or they actually bought property. And so they're just like sitting on this. And now some of them have to go back to the landlords, renegotiate with really nothing to stand on.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really know what to say. Like, we have no idea when we're going to hear back from the state, but can you please extend out my contingent lease? Like, it's just been a hot mess.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even, right, like you said, you can't even come back and say, okay, we have an update, here we are, and this is what, you know, these are the new projections here. You're still kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, we need the land and you need the rent, and, you know, I don't know what to say. You know, it's just, and that's kind of what happens, right? You know, we talk about it and we're going to get deeper into it, you know, but, you know, these big contracts come in and they get the big money, right? Where, and then at the same time, you know, the people who are really affected by, you know, the war on drugs, or, you know, just in general, small entrepreneurs, right? I mean, just take everything out of the equation and just talk about, you know, small business owners and people trying to get something moving. And it's just like, we're the ones who end up getting screwed over, obviously. You know, and it's a big mess, bureaucracy, and, you know, everybody, they get their cut, right? For sure, they're getting their cut for every single application that comes in, and, you know, for that big contract and everything like that. So, I mean, you, I know we were talking off air, and we'll get into your story as well. But, you know, how does it compare? You used to live in LA, right? You're involved in dispensaries. How does it compare, kind of, you know, what you're seeing now, kind of like, you know, what's going on in California? Because we've had our own messes over there as well, obviously.
I think, so I was there in California before they went recreational, and I think, I always say, like, because I've lived all over the U.S., and every region has its own cultural personality, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Cali, for sure, is, like, just, honestly, like, laid back, and it's in everything. it's in the way it works out there, right? Yeah. That was one of the reasons why I had a hard time there, I'll just be honest, because I'm super type A and high strung. Okay. So like, if someone, like business meetings, you know, someone cancels 15 minutes ahead, I'm like, we had a business meeting though. You know what I mean? So like, in Cali, roll with the punches. We got this. We'll figure it out. Like, that's just the spirit of California.
Yeah.
And so I think that really translated into the cannabis industry here in Illinois. Everything is, you know, first of all, time is money. And everything is so planned out. And so that's what I'm seeing that's different. From a medical standpoint, I will say, you know, like the fact that here in Illinois, our patients have to go to one dispensary in order to get, you know, their patient discount. They're assigned to a dispensary. They can't just go wherever they want to go.
Oh, no way.
So when I was living in California, that wasn't the case. Like, I was a medical patient. I could go wherever I wanted to. Whoever was open, whoever was close by, whatever, wouldn't have to worry about, like, any repercussions or not getting my discount. So, you know, I think that just kind of is a testament to like how different these two states are as far as the way they operate. Now, on the flip side, you can look at it the way I just explained it, but you could also look at it, you know, Illinois is number one in risk management, right? So what that means is, like, as a state, when it comes to business operations, they probably do things a little more bureaucratically to mitigate risk, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
California, we, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but there are pros and cons to each, you know, cultural difference, I think, you know, and I think we're starting to see that right now here in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a huge contrast, right? Where in California, it was kind of like, let's just start giving everybody a license, right? And we'll find out later on who'll stick, and that just kind of like saturate everything. And here you're telling me that it's kind of the opposite, right? Where they're saying, okay, like, let's take it easy. Like, let's not, no, not every single person needs a license. We don't need, you know, five dispensaries on one you know, on one corner, you know, so let's take it easy on everything like that. And I think it's actually a good approach in a certain regard. Obviously, it sucks. And like you said, it's just the other side of the coin. But we've seen there's no perfect way, right? There's no perfect way. And we're dealing with people who don't really care about the industry anyways or necessarily who it is. So at least if they're like trying to see what mistakes have been done in another state, and trying to mitigate those, you know, and mitigate that risk, like you were saying, I think, I mean, you know, not one to, you know, to hype up legislators or anything like that, but maybe they're trying to do something over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, we're getting a little bit of your story, but talk to me more about, you know, your background with cannabis, you know, growing up and everything like that, and how you've gone here, you know, with Illinois Equity Staffing.
So I went to school in the South Suburbs, and, you know, I was kind of telling you before we hopped on for the podcast that, like, I grew up in a household with a sibling that, you know, had drug abuse problems. And so one of the things, like, as a teenager, I went to Catholic high school. I just tried to kind of, you know, stay on the straight and narrow, because I was seeing what it was doing to people around me. And it wasn't until I got, I think I was 25, so I must have been just coming out of grad school that I actually started using cannabis. And it was because I had been diagnosed with lupus and Sjogren's and hypothyroidism at the same time. So this was in California. I had moved to California right after grad school, and, you know, I had this huge lesion on my face. You know, they were saying it was cancer, and I was like, no, you need to do a biopsy right now. Tell me what it really is. Don't make any guesses. And then that's when all the tests started coming back. And so immediately from that point, you know, I was built up on all types of drugs, one of which was like a chemical chemotherapy pill. And at the time, I started the pill, and it really kind of makes you nauseous, and you don't have like an appetite at all. You lose a bunch of weight. I know some people are like, oh, you know, obviously during quarantine, everyone wants to lose all this quarantine weight. But at the same time, like, it was just a miserable feeling, like being on this pill. And so at the time I was, you know, dating someone who owned a dispensary in downtown LA. And I really got to kind of see the patient side of things. Uh-huh. I was qualifying patients. And that's when I actually got my own card. And so my perspective is a little bit different. I obviously came in as a patient, obviously, because I have a debilitating disease. And I actually moved back home from LA because of the disease. Couldn't really handle it on my own, need to be near family. And so came back home, and I, you know, everyone was hearing about the buzzes of recreational legalization here in Illinois, but it hadn't, I think this was 2016, so it hadn't happened yet. And then, so I come from a business operations, staffing and a sales background. And so, I am an entrepreneur at heart. And once the bill passed, I had quite a few people who knew me professionally and personally, like, you need to look at this. And, you know, when you first look at a legalization bill, like, everyone's like, oh, I want to own a dispensary. That's like the immediate thought or idea. I don't know why. I think we all think it's sexy naturally to own a dispensary, when really and truly it's probably one of the more risky parts of the business. So after kind of doing some research, I realized, you know, it didn't make sense to be plant touching based on my professional experience. And so I brought a team together that could kind of balance me out in other things like marketing and education, adult development. And so we formed the company, Illinois Equity Staffing, and we are actually an adult. We do the responsible vendor training. So for the state of Illinois, for anyone that works at a dispensary, that certification we actually provide. And we do other cannabis classes, like with Governor State here in the suburbs, Olive Harvey in the city. But we focus on recruiting and human resources from a perspective of creating a more equitable industry. So, you know, that's what we've been doing. It's been awesome. Meeting people, creating opportunities with businesses that understand that right now the industry isn't how it should be. And they, you know, I'll say this, a lot of people kind of say that we got a bunch of companies that don't care.
Sometimes that's true. I will definitely say sometimes that's true. Other times it's more so, if I can put it to you, the easiest way I can put it to you is like, if I owned a company, I have biases that I don't really know I have, right? So I would hire a woman before I'd hire a guy, because a woman would probably understand me better than a guy would. And so we all have these biases. We just have to be able to get past them and realize we have these biases so we can create a more well-rounded team. That's what I'm seeing a lot of teams are trying to bias, that unconscious bias. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a ton of teams and a ton of large businesses that could care less. And some of them go out of their way to make sure that their teams are not diverse. But there are some good folks out there, I think, that realize that they're not well-rounded and they want to figure out a way to make themselves more well-rounded.
Definitely. And you bring up a lot of good points there. And first of all, thank you for sharing your story with us, you know, and with lupus and everything. And, I have, questions about that as well, in terms of growing up, and then we'll get into the other things. You brought up so many good points, right? So, but growing up, right, and obviously being affected by what is, sounds like addiction and, drugs and kind of the way that it affected you and your family and seeing it firsthand and, that devastation. And then later on, coming over and saying like, listen, I'm taking these pills and they're affecting me. And, was there kind of, this barrier that you still felt like, I know this is good for me, but like, fuck, I don't even want to go down that road. You know what I mean? Or is it kind of like, this is a separate situation,
emotional. Yeah, I always knew they were different, so the drugs I'm talking about are literally crack cocaine.
Yeah.
And so I always knew it was, as a child, especially when you're impressionable, you don't necessarily know what's contributing. It wasn't until I was like, probably in college, where I was like, these two are obviously very different. Like one just kind of makes you real easy going. The other one makes you steal shit. What I'm saying? Yeah. So, and it's in a lot of families. And so I think it wasn't, when I started consuming, it wasn't like any feeling of guilt at all, because, and to be honest with you, I wasn't even educated. I think a lot of us have to be educated on we've been talking about this a lot in a lot of the groups that I participate in. And, I really feel like the Black church needs to, have some advocacy outreach so that they can understand, because, a lot of Christian leaders have kind of led us to believe that this plant is like just pure evil. You're going to hell. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I definitely think it's just about education. I never really truly needed the education. I think I was able to make a distinction pretty early on my own, after getting out on my own. But like, I never felt guilty about it. I will say, I try not to like consume if I know I have an early day the next day. I only do it after work. So I'm a lightweight, and I'll probably say this is because my endocannabinoid system is a hot mess. I probably have terrible receptors compared to most people because I have lupus, but that's just my experience.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like you said, responsibly, right? I mean, it's like that anyways. You wouldn't, get hammered before you wake up and have a thing anyway. So it's just that adulting. But, the reason why I bring it up is just, like you said, it can be education. And I definitely agree, in terms of, from religious places of view, or just people who they're trying to maybe protect others, or I don't know what, but they're doing a huge disservice. Cause when you actually start doing your own research and realize you've been lied to the whole time, it's just like, wait a minute, what else you've been lying to me about? Or like, and it just kind of has that opposite effect, but there's that stigma, there's that stigma we're brought up thinking that it is that bad, right? With everything else and not having that distinction. But then you also, you talked about, later on how, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Now I have to edit this, but, okay. You also talked about something else, that's a really great point, is that, we romanticize the industry in so many different ways, right? We romanticize the industry in terms of like the dispensary or wanting to grow, you know, having these kinds of, you know, plant touching businesses. And there's so much out there to do, right? I mean, there's some, you know, we do marketing, you're doing recruiting amongst other things. And there's so much out there, you know, consulting, and everybody kind of has their place. You know, what have been kind of your challenges, but also kind of the things that you've seen, like, oh my gosh, it's so much better, right? As a recruiter doing what you're doing, just, you know, in terms generally in the cannabis industry, as opposed to maybe doing the same thing for another industry.
So I come from corporate America, and I will say what is lovely is the fact that I don't have to wear a suit. In fact, I go out of my way to show up to business meetings with jeans on because I refuse for anyone to professionalize this industry. It makes no sense. So that's one thing. I'm really close to throwing all my suits away. Like, I literally wore suits from the time I graduated college until I went to the cannabis industry. So that's one thing. On the flip side, though, and let me just preface this. If you don't take anything else away from this podcast, take away that the cannabis industry is made up 67% of ancillary businesses. So what that means is the opportunity is more so supporting the industry than it is plant touching. That's one thing we try to drive home every time we talk to someone. I've had people walk up to me and tell me they want to be a bud tender, but they've been doing HVAC for 20 years, and it makes no sense to me why anyone would be interested in being a bud tender when they could literally install HVAC systems in dispensaries all over the country.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, when you're ancillary business, unfortunately, you're like a cannabis business, but you're not a cannabis business. So what do I mean by that? You're a cannabis business because your clients are cannabis businesses. Okay. So that means you can't necessarily go to Bank of America or Chase or whoever to get a loan for financing, for scaling, whatever. But, or even get a bank account. Let's just make it simple. On the flip side, to the cannabis industry, when it comes to, you know, so like here in Illinois, our Department of Commerce Economic Opportunity has, you know, social equity, low interest rate loans. There's technical assistance. There's all types of opportunities to gain more knowledge and financing for your cannabis business if you're plant touching. But if you're an ancillary business, you're not considered, there is no social equity for ancillary businesses, which blows my mind. Because when you think about it, like I said, 67% is ancillary. So that's most of the businesses. So the opportunities are really there for people who really want to be plant touching, which is why it makes sense to most of us when we're reading the bill to go, oh, we should apply for an application. But when you come back and you stand back and look at it, the odds are so slim that you're going to get a license. So it's really difficult. You're almost in this like limbo where you have to sell finance, and really the opportunity is for service-based organizations, because when you start talking about product-based organizations that do distribution or suppliers, or, you know, they have a service. So say you wanted to have a service where you, this is the example I always use, but say you want to have a service where you do, some sort of reporting on the plants with drones, which that does exist. There is a business that does that. Their name escapes me. But say you wanted to start a business like that. There's no way to build up capital unless you're doing, obviously, venture capitalism. And that's a whole nother story. But there's no like traditional route to gaining finances to start a business like that. So you literally would have to go in the way you and I did as a service-based organization. So that those are like the disadvantages and the advantages of like being an ancillary in the cannabis industry.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really think about that so much, right? I mean, you don't get any of the benefits, you know, in terms of stuff that it's written into the bill or anything like that, and yet you're still hamstrung with, you know, the banks and everything else that goes along with it, not getting loans. And that's why, you know, we see, you know, you talk about venture capital or angels, you know, sometimes, you know, predatory loans or anything else that goes along with it. You know, that's how people kind of start getting themselves in trouble in that regard. Especially when it doesn't work out, like we were talking about at the beginning, right? Things just don't work out the way that we necessarily plan to. Things take longer. They take 3 times longer, 5 times longer than we thought it was going to take, you know, and that's no fault of our own sometimes. And, you know, shifting gears a little bit, you also talked about, you know, another interesting point, right? Was that, you know, I think sometimes, you know, there's no doubt about it that, you know, we talk about systemic racism and you know, the war on drugs and how people inherently, you know, don't want diversity, right? But you also brought up a point that I think, I love how you know, we talk about, okay, well, maybe they're trying to mitigate risk and this and that, but also, you know, me as a psych major, psych guy, you know, it's just human nature to relate to someone that we see that looks like us, right? Or, you know, you're taught like even in, you know, in sales or whatever, right? Like, you know, acting the way someone else does, or, you know, mimicking the movement, or there's so, like, such a subconscious thing that goes on. And the same thing goes on sometimes when we're hiring candidates or we're looking at candidates and we're seeing, and it may not be anything else, right? And we look and we say, you know, it's a subconscious thing. And we look at it, you know, it's such a nefarious thing. And I mean, I'm all into that stuff as well. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of stuff going on underneath the surface. There's no doubt about it. And the higher up you get, the more you kind of get into that. But I mean, what can we do? Is it something that as a company, I have to make the personal choice to go out and to do that? Or is there something that we can do to kind of bring awareness to that? And, you know, to kind of, you know, like in the NFL, you see like the, you know, the Rooney Rule and you know, just forcing people to have applications and to do interviews with no intention of ever hiring them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, what can we really do about that?
So what I'm seeing right now is that in Illinois, it's, you know, if people don't get their shit together, it will turn into what you're talking about, affirmative action. And it was never meant to be affirmative action. It's just do the right thing and make money, you know, take care of your customers, do the right thing, take care of your employees, and you'll do great. But people are always trying to circumvent the rules, you know, and so you're absolutely right in that respect. I think the number one thing we can do is educate each other on the biases that we have. Like we all have, you know, I think we always talk about middle-aged white men having the biases. We all have it. Like every single one of us has. It's just the white men are the ones that have the money, right? Uh-huh. So they're the ones that are in the spotlight making all the decisions. At the end of the day, when someone realizes that they have the unconscious bias and they now they're aware of it, even though they're not aware of like when it's happening, they know they have it. So they're consciously trying to be intentional about their actions. That's number one. So the education piece. Number two, if you know that your organization, because it then becomes a company culture. If you start hiring a bunch of people that you relate with, y'all all have this unconscious bias. And so that includes your HR department. So it may be possible that you need to form a relationship with a outside third party recruiter, you know, that just says, hey, this is what I'm seeing. These are some holes that you guys have. You don't have a lot of women in leadership. You don't have any veterans. And you don't have any brown or black people. Did you know that? Okay, you didn't know that. No problem. No problem. Let's work on it. You know what I'm saying? But like, these people have to feel comfortable to have these conversations with recruiters, and they have to know that they have the bias in the first place. There are, and I've seen it in all industries. It's not just the cannabis industry. I was just working in tech, and I will tell you, it pissed me off. I would send in my own internal like referrals of people that were amazing at what they do for the tech industry, the company I was working for. And these recruiters, little white girls, would completely look over these resumes, and the entire office in downtown Chicago began to see the pattern. All of the brown and black folks saw the pattern. This is a tech company, right? So that means we got a bunch of Indians, a bunch of Latinos, and a bunch of black folks, usually at the lower entry level positions. And we see it. We see the recruiters bringing in nothing but people that look like them. Uh-huh. And it becomes a thing where, you know, we had a whole meeting about it. HR, I mean, a headquarters had to come in, human resources, and talk to the entire office. Because the office was like, this is what we're seeing. We don't know if y'all are seeing it, but we think it's a problem. And, you know, it comes with the awareness piece. We have to be able to talk about it. And that's the thing. Some people feel real uncomfortable talking about our differences. But if we can't talk about our differences, how the hell are we going to get on one accord? Uh-huh. It just doesn't, you know, that's what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, we see it. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, bringing awareness to it, do you see that people are generally you know, accepting or open or willing to look at it, or the people kind of averse to it, kind of getting denied about it?
I have never come across, because they don't,
cool.
I'll tell you, they don't want to deal with a company like mine. I'll just be honest. Those ones that are really being intentional about what they're doing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not going to hire.
They don't want anything to do with the community. They don't want anything. They want to do the bare minimum, what the law is requiring them to do. And then when it comes to social equity, they're going to do what the law is requiring them to do, which is why I said it's turning into affirmative action, which is what it was never supposed to be. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Like, there are companies that refuse to even look at resumes unless they have the person's address on them, on the resume, so that they can determine whether or not they live in a disproportionately impacted area. Wow. That's how far people are going.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, now we live, you know, we talk about, you know, like, the perception is, you know, the rich white man, and these are the people, the, you know, and we all have those, carry those biases. You know, I definitely know that the last few months I've looked at myself, you know, and whatever is going on inside of me. Have you seen that things have kind of been changing, shifting a little bit on their own?
Everyone, because social equity and talking about race is cool right now. Yeah, everyone wants to talk about it, and everyone wants to acknowledge Juneteenth, and everyone wants to do something silly, like paint fucking streets Black Lives Matter, but nothing is being done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yes, people are talking about it on social media, and they think it's cool, but then, you know, when a disgruntled employee gets on social media and loses it on the company, then it's like, oh, you probably should have thought this through, you know, because posting on Instagram that you're you know, in support of Black Lives Matter, but you're not really doing anything about it, is not a good look.
Huh. No, definitely. You know, we talk about, you know, substance over, you know, symbolism. And a lot of the things that we've seen is just symbolism. Like you were saying, you know, you make a post or you do this and you say you support. And then it's a matter of, like, you know, well, what are you actually doing, right? And, you know, it's just kind of performative, you know, kind of, you know, cool, you know, I'm in the group. You know, yep. and then we see,
I'm not, like, being canceled this week.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I've been surprised to see, you know, cause I, you know, I have my own crazy beliefs and stuff. Don't really lean right or left, but I've seen, like, in the industry, a lot of, like, you would think that we're pretty progressive people in the industry, right? I mean, we're pretty progressive and liberal in a lot of ways. And I mean, come on, like, you know, it's kind of, we're pushing for this legislation, you know, that's affected so many people. And then I've seen, like, people coming out of the woodwork recently, you know, of just kind of, I didn't realize that there was such a kind of, like, conservative, consistent, you know, contingency within the industry that I've, like, been showing up, like, more and more. And I'm like, how, I mean, I don't, just don't get how they fly so much. Like, I want to learn more about how it flies together, kind of thing, and that kind of stuff. I'm always open to talking, you know what I mean? And all that kind of stuff. I mean, have you kind of seen that too, where it's just, I mean, we're seeing it all over the country, right? We're seeing it all over in all regards, where people, the extreme left, extreme right, kind of, like, rearing their ugly heads in different ways. And then, I mean, I was just so surprised to see it within our own community, kind of thing. I was like, I mean, how can you, you know, do it? How do they come together?
I mean, I think those people were always in the, this new market, not the, obviously not the legacy market. I think they were always here, just maybe not as vocal. But, you know, when you think about the only people that can really afford to start up these multi-million dollar companies, when you think about it, are white males. And so, you know, when you look at the statistics of what side, left or right, most white males are on that have money, you know, it makes sense. So for me, it was never a surprise. I was just like, oh, there they are, you know.
Yeah, I was seeing posts on my LinkedIn feed. I'm like, wait, how do I know you? How am I connected with you? And then I'm like, exactly. Oh my goodness. Like,
exactly. And now, you know, I'm even starting to see the industry become like more elitist and like, almost like, so I was on a panel discussion and someone
pretentious, conceited, you know.
Yes, not even that. Like, we're credentializing cannabis.
Yeah.
And why? I have no idea. Because when you think about it, people have been smoking and selling and growing here since the early 1900s. So yeah. Why are we credentializing it? And, you know, it's even to the point where, like, some people are like, well, I don't want their illegitimate experience on their resume. And it's like, where do you think the industry started? Like, yeah. How do you think the industry became what it is? It started with a bunch of legacy market folks. Now it's not okay to have legacy market folks. Because why? Because now we've started credentializing the industry. Uh-huh. And if you look back at every other industry, we can talk about project management. We can go back and talk about the Chinese herbalists. Those Chinese herbalists that were in Canada, all of their shops were shut down, okay, by a bunch of white men that wanted to basically legitimize what they were offering. Mind you, these Chinese herbalists had, you know, basically opiates from China. Okay, so they had the purest form of opiates to heal or help ease the pain of a lot of these miners back in the early 1900s. So they shut down these shops. And then what did they do? They created their own shops, Canadian and American shops, selling lesser quality opiates, and told the country, Canada and US, don't buy unless you see this stamp of approval. Basically, if they're Chinese, don't buy from them. Uh-huh. So that's happening now.
Yeah.
History is literally repeating itself, and it's embarrassing.
I mean, you know, it's we see it a lot, and like you said, you know, I know people who've been growing for 30, 40 years, people who've been advocating for 30, 40 years, lawyers, you know, getting people out of jail, everything like that. And then, you know, yeah, like you said, part of what you guys do is education, right? And courses and everything like this. And we see more of this stuff coming up. And a part of me says, like, all right, cool, man. So you like took like a 3-day class, and like now all of a sudden you're an expert and you have this, you know, little certificate that doesn't, you know, it's just like going to, you know, some online college and saying, hey, I got a college mm-hmm. degree. It's like, it's not accredited. It's very nice. I'm glad that you learned something. And then I also think, okay, like, you know, I think we're trying to give people a fair side in our conversation, May. And I think, you know, okay, so listen, I'm in digital marketing, and there are a lot of nuances that people don't know pertaining to the cannabis industry, right? And I always tell, you know, some of our clients, you know, or prospects or whatever else, I say, hey, you want to work with us? Not work with us? It's all good. Just find somebody who knows what they're doing within the industry. Don't get yourself messed up. You know, like, don't get yourself, you know, getting letters.
Shut down. Like that. Shadow blocked. Down. Yes,
exactly. Shadow beam. So there is, I guess, a part of it that is, you know, there's so many nuances and so much compliance issues. Is that kind of like what they're trying to do? Or you think it's just kind of like, okay, here's our stamp of approval. Now you can come, you can go work somewhere. And does it actually carry any meaning behind it?
Is that what these
credentials? And, yeah. Like, you know,
I think it has to do with creating a barrier mm-hmm. to entry. And that's what it always has been. Mm-hmm. Going back to Chinese herbalists, it's always been taking away from those who naturally understood the drug, the plant, whatever, making it illegal, and then legitimizing it for our specific country through the channels that we want it to, and making sure that no one else has a way to get in unless we give them the okay to come in. And so that's what I'm seeing in the industry. In fact, I almost feel like, as a Black woman, I'm gonna just be honest, when we first started, it was like people were like, I didn't give you permission to come into this industry. And it's like, I didn't have to ask your permission to come into this industry. You want to know why? Because I know HR and recruiting. That's what it comes down to. But I think it's on us, like everyone in the industry. And I it starts with all of us. Like, we have to be welcoming. Like, I can't tell you how many meetings and organizations I've sat in where people literally try to delegitimize someone because they didn't necessarily have the same route that person took. And it's like, what makes you any better than the person sitting next to you? You smoked more weed? Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. We need to stop, because it literally is becoming one of the other industries. And we have a unique opportunity in a new industry. I'm trying to think of when we had a new industry, and I want to say it's the early 1900s. You know, that was the last time we had like a brand new industry. And we have an opportunity to form it and create it in the way that we want it to be, being, you know, equitable across the board, and inclusive and diverse. And yet we're failing as a group. And, you know, a lot of people are like, this is what we need to do. Just like you said, people are like, this is what we need to do. Social equity is number one, but no one's like really pushing for it. And I can't tell you how many times like we have like literally blow to blow with people about it, because it's like someone has to go in and say, look, we need to be more equitable and diverse. How can we do it? You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about how, they just want to complain and say, oh, there's no Black people. And it's like, okay, we know that, but how can we move forward?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, you bring up these, we see it all the time, right? The ego within the industry, and I know better than you. And I don't know, it comes off as a little bit, you know, insecure. People, you know, have, they're scared someone's going to take their spot or what else is going on. And it's so weird because, you know, we get to work with people from both sides of cannabis, so to speak, right? With cannabis, right? And hemp. You know, and you don't see it so much on the hemp side. I don't know what happens, you know, but you don't see people come in because it is so new. I guess it is like kind of bring back something completely. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why, you know, prohibition, you know, was to you know, get the hemp industry out, you know, for everything else. So people, I think, are coming new. Whereas on the cannabis side, people have been doing it for, you know, for a long time, and genetics and selling, and people have had to try and, you know, keep a low profile and hide who they were and what they're doing. And maybe, I don't know, just thinking out loud, and maybe it's because they're like, finally my time to shine, right? Like, I've been here and I couldn't show anybody, I couldn't tell anybody what I was doing, and now I can finally be the expert, you know. And then someone comes in and says, you're not an expert, you weren't doing what we were doing, you know, kind of thing. Maybe that's I don't know. I don't know, but it definitely comes off as pretentious in a lot of ways, and people aren't welcome in a lot of ways, and you know, so and there are people like, you know, on both sides of the spectrum, obviously, you know, I mean, but I definitely you know, seen that in practice as well, for sure. So you know, with you know, obviously with the Illinois Equity Staffing, you know, talking about getting going, and you know, you have the background and bring it in, and you know, but what's been like the biggest obstacle that you faced, and how you've been able to overcome that?
You know, I would probably say the pandemic, just to be completely honest with you. Being an ancillary business, it comes up a lot. You're in this limbo. And so we just were thankful enough that we could pivot, you know, and focus more on the education side of things. But really, when we were, you know, doing pro forma and really trying to understand what was coming up for the year 2020, at this point, we saw the recruiting and the HR really taking a forefront over education. Last year made sense, education, because we were just legalizing. But with the legalization and everything opening up and licenses being awarded, the thought was, other parts of the business would begin to flourish. And because the licenses weren't awarded, and because, you know, we were being told that they weren't awarded because of the pandemic, we had to figure out ways to pivot and focus more on education. So it was a huge challenge, I think, for a lot of ancillary businesses, but especially us. But I mean, just to be honest with you, being a Black female in this industry is not easy every day, every single day. We have people who come to us and try to take advantage all the time. And we're pretty giving people. Like, we want to work with the community, and we want to build awareness in the community that needs it most, which are communities that have been affected by the war on drugs and have been disproportionately impacted with poverty and unemployment. But we've had people come to us, you know, all types of people, people who want to be strategic partners, people who want to be clients, that will come to us and really, in all honesty, they see Black women leading an organization and like, oh, let's see what we can take them for. And you would think in 2020 that wouldn't be a thing, but once again, you know, 2020, Black people are still being killed by police. So anything is quite possible. But it's a huge challenge being a female that is Black in the industry every single day. And because I feel like this industry is like so protective and so like becoming credentialized, you know, you have to really ease in and really show that you mean the best. That's the other thing about the industry is like, the industry does not want, you know, which is weird when you think about it, because we have so many people who don't mean well already in the industry. But when you look at the industry as a whole, there are a lot of people that are very protective and they want to make sure that you mean right by the industry. And so it really comes down to honestly working your ass off. And it's sad to say, but we feel as Black women in the industry that we have to work twice as hard to get half the recognition for the work we do.
Yeah. That's just one to hear, definitely, you know. And I mean, it's, you know, you see it in the news and see it what's going on, and you know, have a long, long way to go. That's for sure. Long way to go in those regards. And like I said, disappointed to hear that people come in with that intention to say, "Oh, well, look at them. You know, I can take advantage of them or whatever else it is." Instead of going over here, you know, that then I guess what can we expect from Illinois Equity Staffing in the future? You know. You guys planning and you have coming up?
You know, we have quite a few clients here in Illinois that we do expect to get licenses. And we have a ton of projects with a lot of different strategic partners. We did apply for the R3 grant, which is the Restore, Reinvest, Renew grant here in Illinois to kind of put the revenue, the cannabis revenue, back into the communities that need it most. And so there are a lot of things pretty much up in the air, but we're also working with clients in other states. So Michigan and Florida and California. So hoping to scale and to develop new partnerships with folks in the industry that are ancillary and that understand the importance of diversity, social equity, and inclusion.
Very good. Very good. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, had Michael on before, asking this question, you know, ask everybody who comes on this, my favorite thing to ask, obviously, and, you know, how do you define success, whether professionally, personally, spiritually, you know, what does success look like for you?
That is a good question. I think success for me is seeing the industry I work in thriving. I know that sounds weird, but if you're in an industry that's struggling and has a lot of problems, I would say there's more that needs to be done. And right now I can say, at least for Illinois, there's a lot for us to do. I think we kind of touched on this earlier. It's really easy to complain and like point out all of the things that's wrong. But at the end of the day, it's really on us. It's not up to the legislators to do everything for us. It's really on the industry to right wrongs and to make things right. The legislators just really give us the tools to start the conversation. But I think the industry that you're in, when you take a look at it and you take a step back, if it's thriving, then I can say you are probably successful.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like you said, you know, we try our best to police, you know, and even on this podcast, you know, talk to a lot of people, and sometimes you can tell right away, you know, if someone means well or doesn't mean well, or, you know, I can usually tell pretty quickly. I'm like, all right, well, this guy just wants to make money. Okay. I mean, you know, whatever else, but you know, it is important for us to, you know, that is the way that the industry is going to thrive, right? As if, you know, we support people who are doing good things in the industry and kind of disassociate, I guess, you know, put it nicely, from people who are just doing their own thing. You know, I'm not going to come out of here and insult people, or not going to come out here and bash them and, you know, write all kinds of things about them. But I'm just going to, you know, okay, cool. That was a nice talk. And then I'm probably not going to talk to you again, but that's okay. You know, but That's just me being real, but
understood.
But, yeah, no, definitely. No, but it is important. It is important, you know. And I think, you know, talking about the way that the pandemic's affected us, you know, it's everybody's been affected in different ways. But, you know, I brought up a couple times on the industry, you know, or on the podcast that, you know, maybe something good's happening as well because, you know, people who are coming in here just looking for money and just looking for this and that, you know, they don't have the, they don't have it in them to keep going, you know. They're kind of just like, all right, fine, on to the next thing. What's next? You know, and, you know, they're in crypto a couple years ago and then they're in cannabis, you know, last couple years and now they're looking for something new now, you know what I mean? So, okay, cool. If that's one good thing that comes from it, then that's fine, you know, but we have a responsibility to keep it going for us who want to be in here for the long term. So, Johnny, it was great, you know, it's great speaking with you. You know, as we close, you know, how can listeners find out more about you and about more of what you're doing, connect with you? How are you for your services and everything else?
Yeah, for sure. You guys can follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn if you just want to search Illinois Equity Staffing. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. Just search our company name. And then our website is www.illinoisequitystaffing.com.
Very good. Shani, I really appreciate you coming on. It's been really great. And thanks, everybody, for listening as well. So good luck to you and the rest of 2020 and beyond.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's grow@calacann.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.